So it's that thing we do every Thursday. We call it Your House, Your Home, and we explore various aspects of life under a roof, whether the roof and all the walls and everything else belongs to you. Maybe you're renting, maybe you're renovating, maybe you live in a block of flats, maybe you're thinking of buying property, maybe you live in a more collective space like an estate. It's the latter that's our focus today. But by the way, if you do have ideas of what you'd like us to explore and question and dig into, please drop me a note on 31702 or a WhatsApp on 0727021702. But here's today's issue. On Twitter, somebody called Mary Jane's Explores said this: when an Uber driver decides to violate the speed limit in a private estate, who gets to pay the fine? Does it fall on the owner of the home where the Uber driver was going, or should Uber be liable, or indeed the driver? Pretty tricky stuff, but fortunately we have absolutely the right guest to take us through the intricacies. Marina Constas is Director of BBM Attorneys, joining us on 702 Drive. Marina, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hello, John. Thanks so much.
Why don't we kick off with that one? The Uber driver goes too fast, there's a camera, and...
Well, look, at the end of the day, the Uber driver is a service provider to the owner. And in terms of the Sectional Titles Act, and you would find it probably in the rules of an estate, you're only liable for the conduct of your tenants and your occupants and your visitors. So in other words, if my brother came to visit me and he hit the main gate and there was damage to the gate, then I would be responsible to pay to fix that gate. But when it comes to service providers, the body corporate doesn't have jurisdiction over service providers. So they certainly wouldn't be able to claim from the owner who's utilizing the Uber service. And as for the Uber themselves, that's debatable because, again, the body corporate might be exceeding their jurisdiction.
So let me frame this a little bit more tightly. Now, I live in a block of flats, but I can imagine this kind of thing happening in the sort of shared space that you find on an estate. Now, we had people doing some renovations and they were working with paint, and as they drove, they didn't notice that there was some paint leaking out of one of the containers, and there was a paint trail. In fact, it was quite attractive, if I was honest. Lovely red paint making a line down the middle of the road. But if it was something that maybe was perceived to be damaging, could you be responsible for that, or does the body corporate and with it all the people who live there just simply have to suck it up and say, well, that's got to be repaired or fixed and we're all going to pay? Mm.
I think it would be worth a shot to go to that service provider because damage had been caused to the complex itself, right, to the physicality of the complex. The Uber driver is a different story because the body corporate, if they don't have the relevant equipment to be seeing if he's actually gone over the speed limit, it's their word against his. So it's much harder to actually prove that. But if there was damage to the property, then it becomes a lot easier to go against the service provider, but certainly still not the owner.
Let's go back to speeding fines. The person speeding is your guest. How does that work?
Yeah, well, then again, they've got to prove that the person was speeding, and you are responsible for the conduct of your tenants, your visitors.
Right.
They could certainly try it, but again, I think it would be quite difficult to prove whether or not that person was speeding. And there's case law where they look at whether or not the body corporate has the right to actually take over the act of another institution, which would be the traffic department with their different kinds of equipment, etc.
Right.
So, yeah, I would leave that one in the air. I don't think they would be successful.
Yeah, no, it sounds like that area that is not. But then what about the fines that are part of the conduct rules? I don't know if I've used the right term. Mm. You'll put me right if I haven't. Loud noise, washing hanging in places where washing shouldn't hang, and so on. How effective are, in general, body corporates at actually getting the money back from people?
I think quite successful, and I think it all depends on how the fines clause or penalties clause is couched within either the conduct rules or the memorandum of incorporation together with the rules of an estate or homeowners association. So, John, you've got to be careful when you're dealing with fines, because these are things that are imposed upon people.
Right.
And if you get a group of trustees who are quite high-handed, who might be a bit vindictive because last week somebody did something bad to them and this week it's their turn to get back at them, you need to look at that proper crafting of that clause for fines. In other words, you need to say how much the fine is, and you need to review that every year at your AGM. You need to give a right to be heard to the person who's committed the offence. So in other words, you can't just slap a fine onto their account, for example. Say, 1,500 rand because your washing was up for too long or in the incorrect place. There's got to be an opportunity for the person that you're trying to find to come and state his case. And that must be in your clause, otherwise your clause is rendered invalid. So it is possible, and you can certainly fine people, again, in terms of the sectional titles legislation, not homeowners, I'm talking now sectional legislation. You can't just, even if you do fine them and do it all properly, you can't just slap that onto the levy account. It will have to be on a separate account, because levies have to be clear. They've got to be clear in one account. And what was happening in the past is that these trustees would just slap these fines, and eventually the interest that ran on them, etc., just became untenable for that particular person to afford.
And that all then becomes another kind of what's the word? Thorn in the foot, you know, or thorn in the side. That relationships in collective living spaces, in my experience, can become immensely poisonous around these things. And one of the things that I must say has always frustrated me, but you can confirm if this is the absolute legal position. Even if someone owes money on fines, on levies, or whatever it is, you cannot deny them access to any of the facilities that are owned as a collective. Is that broadly true, and is that ever likely to change?
Yes, it is true, definitely. And no, I don't think it is likely to change at all, because as a creditor, the body corporate is actually in a better position than any other creditor, because if levies are properly computed and put on a separate account, and your fines are properly, you know, worked out, and you've given them a right to be heard, and you put it on a separate account, if that person wants to sell their unit, then those amounts that are outstanding have to be paid up before they get a clearance certificate to be able to sell their unit. So that's really, you're in a stronger position than most creditors. So the law is not going to give you extra indulgence or relief.
Thanks so much, Marina Constas, Director of BBM Attorneys. Maybe you've got some stories of your own about estate living or block of flats living, or call it whatever you like, according to the circumstances of where you stay. But have these issues bedeviled relations between not just you as an individual, but perhaps, you know, part of a group who generally abide by the rules in your relationships with a smaller number of people who don't? Give us a call on that if you like. 011-883-0702.